This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton, Alex Ferrario, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango in the studio with Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN and Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic. Gentlemen, as we sit here on this Monday, we have got a Super Bowl matchup set. We have got a hockey team that's won five games in a row. I mean, if you really want to expand the good sports feelings in St. Louis, you're, you know, probably, what, two and a half, three weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Taylor Swift gets to go to Vegas.
Taylor, which is so great because we were so very much worried on whether or not she'd get there.
I was worried.
So it's pretty good to be a sports fan
but
these
days.
But
do you think, so she's going to fly from her concert in Tokyo to Vegas for the Super Bowl. Do you think she's like Southwest flight, middle seat?
No, I think she's Taylor Swift private jet flying over the United States to get to Vegas for that Super Bowl game.
I tell you what, the last couple of years, I don't even really remember, not really, I guess, last year, but there had been some matchups in the Super Bowl in the last handful of years that I really just did not care about. Like, I just didn't care about. But I feel like this game is going to be a good game. I feel like it's not going to be one of those things that by halftime we're disinterested in the game because we already see the commercials ahead of time. You know what I'm saying? So there's not really a ton of surprise.
Yeah, so it is Chiefs and Lions, right? The Lions kick the field goals. Yeah. They won the
Lions,
game.
The Lions actually went for it in those certain situations, or their receivers caught the ball in those certain situations. I really wanted an Eminem versus Taylor Swift Super Bowl.
I love the picture still to this day, and it feels very much me yesterday as Eminem is giving the double birds to the 49ers fans. I was like, you know what? That's my kind of fan right there, man.
Donnie's feeling good. A little Eminem on the drive home later on today.
I just don't... You know, man, there just gets to be certain situations as a sports fan where you feel like you need to puff up a little bit. And I feel like that would have been it, you know, yesterday or whatever.
You know, I was writing my Blues story yesterday, and there was obviously tons of tweets about the decision not to kick the field goals and everything. The one I was waiting for, who was the Tampa Bay Rays manager that pulled Snell out?
Oh, Kevin Cash.
Yeah, Cash. Like, I wish he would have tweeted, like, you got to kick the field goals. You can't go for it there.
You can't follow the analytics.
You got to make the right decision.
Dude, I was trying to forget about my little hang up with baseball right now, and then you brought that up, and then that makes me think about just some of the asinine stuff in baseball right now that I just do not love, including that particular thing. I'm telling you what, if I'm ever thrown a no-hitter at anything, any
no,
walk,
Donnie,
don't pull me for the love of Pete.
The analytics said get him out of there. And you gotta follow analytics.
I guess so.
They're the smart people these days.
And it's not like I want to poo-poo on analytics. They have their place. But for the love of Jesus, man, let the guy go as long as he can and try to get the no-no. What are we even doing here anymore?
Man, it's not even February, and Donnie is pissed off at baseball.
Oh, dude. I just wish I had a better... I have to... You know what? When I go to my therapist the next time, out of all my life events, I gotta sit down and go, hey, listen, I've got this really negative opinion of the Cardinals, and I really can't shake it, and I don't feel like it's their fault. I feel like it's my fault at this point. You know what I mean?
Therapist finds a sports psychologist and says, maybe this will help.
And also, too, seriously, showing how screwed up I am, this is a team with Nolan Arenado, one of my incredibly most favorite players to watch even before he was here. Getting a chance to watch that guy play third base and hit the middle of the lineup is really something special. I love Jordan Walker. There are little things that I like, but just as a whole, I used to be counting down to when pitchers and catchers reported. Baseball was my first favorite sport, and I just don't feel the same way. And a couple of weeks ago, actually over Christmas break, I rewatched the Ken Burns baseball documentary, which is just freaking so great. And I loved it, but it made me sad. It made me sad because that's, even in the last inning of that documentary, baseball isn't like that anymore. Mm-hmm. And now they're tweaking the rules every friggin' year, and like, it's just in a weird spot. But I do think that it's maybe my attitude more so than it is the sport.
All sports kind of are in weird spots right now. I think it's still weird every once in a while seeing those shootouts in hockey. Like, just to end a hockey game, I do think, now don't get me wrong, it's fun, it's exciting, but it does seem so odd to be doing a portion of the game that dictates the outcome of the regular season, but then when you get to postseason, you'd be like, nah, that win didn't count. You
right,
know?
Right, right.
See, and then when they do the standings, you need regulation wins to qualify, but not shootout wins.
Yeah,
and
first it was regulation and overtime wins, then it was regulation wins, and now it's like, yeah, shootouts don't matter. Like, let's go back to the ties at this point.
Yeah, but Donnie, you said something earlier that got me thinking. We got to do some role play with Donnie here. You said you go see your psychiatrist. So let's. I want to.
I didn't bring my wig this time.
Not that role play. So let's say the Blues have lost four in a row, which we're going to get to them winning five in a row here shortly.
Yep.
But let's say I want to hear what it's like to be, you're on the couch next to us, you know, they've lost four in a row, the power play's 0 for its last 15, and your psychiatrist says to you, all right, Donnie, tell me what's going on with you.
Donnie,
what's
you seem upset.
What's this sound like?
Well, it would be very sly. She would look at me and she would go, if you're not getting enjoyment out of this, maybe it's not something in which that you should spend your time with. You know? Like a lot of times she tells me that I already know the answers. I just need to like say them out loud, and she like kind of reinforce. She's absolutely
Do you always walk
amazing.
Out of there too like, son of a, that was really good?
Oh, yeah. Because like she has this like sort of matter of fact way about her that is just, I don't know, man. Like it just helps me see in the mirror a lot better or whatever. But yeah, I think she would tell me like, hey, if this is not fun, then maybe we shouldn't have it as a fun activity.
And Donnie says, you know what? She's probably right. I need to turn this off. And the next day turns the Blues game on. Son of a.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. I'm not quitting sports.
You can't.
I mean,
yeah,
there's just,
can't.
I mean, it's.
Yeah, when she says you got to quit sports, you know.
Yeah.
But I do have a question. You said she a couple different times. Let me ask you. Is your psychiatrist your wife?
No, but Mary is also my therapist and should absolutely get paid for that, man. Because there are some times where I just, like, I'll tell you this. So I went on this rant at the house the other day. We were talking about shows this summer that we wanted to go to, and I started getting really upset that that the Creed show was selling so well. Like, like I think it actually might be sold out
at
this point.
Is this my opportunity to tell them I have tickets to go see Creed?
That's a shame, Alex. But I just remember like going on this like thing, and I'm starting to get hot about it, and I'm just like, don't we remember when this band sucked and we made fun of them all the time and it was just terrible and Scott Stapp and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, honey, you know, it's just not that big of a deal. She's like, are you going to go to the show? And I was like, no, I'm not going to go to the show. She's like, then why do you care? Okay, honey, good point. I remember, though, the first time that I heard My Own Prison, I can vividly recall being in the office of the Cole Street building and going, what crappy local band is this? That is 100%. I have never been. That was one of the first times that I was really surprised when a song became so big. It was My Own Prison, and then right after that was Days of the New, Touch, Peel, and Stand. And I thought, this is just like another one of our local bands. Make good. Bah, 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 bah. This won't do anything.
Why is he crapping on local
bands? Well, because you know, before a band gets to be a national band, they got to start somewhere, and it's locally, and sometimes it ain't great. You know what I mean? And here's another reason I hate Creed, just so to let you know. Not only is it because they are musically just absolute garbage, garbage, but I got screamed at by their tour manager at the Galaxy.
Oh, now we're getting to the reason.
That makes sense.
Now we're
getting
to the reason.
No. It was the I hated them a lot first.
And then this is the cherry.
And then I had to
top.
Go out on a Tuesday night to the Galaxy on Washington when Creed was playing a very sold-out show. So I'm going there. I don't want to be there in the first place. And their tour manager gets in my face and starts cussing at me that if I cuss on stage, he's going to throw me out of the back door and that we'll never do anything with the band again. So don't effing do that. And don't effing. So like by the time that I got done, I went on the stage and went, Creed's coming up in a minute. Have a great night, everybody. And then just walked out the back door. I was like, I'm not staying for a friggin' minute of this friggin' nonsense.
I probably would have dropped an F-bomb just to see if the guy could throw me out the door.
Dude,
could he throw you?
First of all, at that time, that was probably like 1999, so I'm probably a $1.35,
oh, okay.
Soaking wet. So absolutely he could have thrown
35.
Me out of there.
I remember kindergarten.
But yes. So anyway, Mary does play the in-house therapist role.
I keep saying psychiatrist, it's therapist.
Yeah. But I got one of those too. But I do more of the talking out the stuff with the therapist. I just check in with the shrink every once in a while to make sure that my meds are good and that.
All
sort
right.
Of thing.
Well, thanks for listening to the Creed Superfan podcast.
Yeah, I'm glad I wore my athletic jacket to cover up my Scott Stapp tattoo over here.
I always wonder too, like, Because, like, part of me wonders, like, do people really want to know that I play bands that I can't stand? Or do they just want, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like we're in a different time. We're back in the day, obviously, you don't really knock on any of the artists that you play. But, like, now, I feel like, realistically, people have to know that I don't love every band that I play.
Well, yeah, because there's people listening that probably turn off the radio when a band comes on that they don't like, too, right? Because there's everything available to them.
100%.
Podcasts, you get the music on your phone. So, like, if there's something that's played that they don't like, like, I think it's better, and this is just me speaking, it's better, I've never been a DJ, to connect with that DJ if they don't like the band that you don't like.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I was doing something for a while when I played Bon Jovi on the Arch, where I might say something, you know, kind of disparaging about John Bon Jovi. But then I see a picture of homeboy working in a friggin' food kitchen washing dishes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, wow. So cool that I'm the a-hole. So, you know what? Living on a Prayer might not be my jam, but it looks like John Bon Jovi is a real good friggin' human being, so maybe I can just shut my mouth. So, like, ever since then, I've been real kind of, eh.
Unless it's Creed.
I didn't know that Creed. Bon Jovi thing was a thing, you know, like, hate Bon Jovi.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm trading texts with you and one time with Favaz, too, and he was calling him trash, and I'm like,
oh, geez.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
This is like a...
Favaz is deep.
Really?
But I think that if I had to play him as much as Favaz has had to play him over
That's
the years,
a good point.
That would absolutely do yeah. that for me.
Yeah, you're talking about playing bands that you might not like. I want to hear, Alex, what's your list of blues players that you have to cover who you don't like?
Oh. talk to me in 10 years.
That's really tough, though, man, because
I'll say this. Covering the Blues locker room compared to the Cardinals locker room,
yeah.
It's a very short list.
Yeah, for sure.
Boy, isn't
Blues,
that crazy.
The Blues guys are very easy to be around.
Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of which, he said that he's never been a DJ. I want to hear Alex, like, send it to a song here.
Coming up next, the best version of Life is a Highway, Rascal Flatts.
How do you do, Donnie?
Donnie?
Not great.
Nailed it?
Now, for one, that's misinformation. That's fake news is what that whole thing is right there. But no, you got to get a little
and
more
And then after
pizzazz.
That, My Sacrifice by Creed.
Yeah, see, that was real flat. You know, that's not, and I know you got it in you because I hear
you
in
hear
the pre
the
and post game.
Yeah. How do you do it, Donnie? Let's hear it.
Well, if it would be, all right, let's see. 84 and a half minutes of commercial free music on 106.5 The Arch. This is Rascal Flatts and their mistake of a cover of Tom Cochran's Life is a Highway, getting you home commercial free on 106.5 The Arch.
That was actually
really good.
Have you done this before, Donnie? Okay, now, Donnie, bring it back from pre and post for the Blues.
Ooh, yeah.
Nah, man. No,
you got to do
it. Wait. All right.
Wait, Donnie, let me set it up. There's going to be 10 seconds left to go in the game. Kerber's going to send it to you to do the post game here. And the Blues win it 4-3 in
Bring
overtime.
Bring out the Zamboni.
Bring out the Zamboni. Donnie, it's you for the post game.
Well, we're back on 101 ESPN. Blues win their fifth in a row, and we're going to throw it back to Kerbs and Joey in just a couple of minutes and find out some of the particulars on our Blues win tonight. Blues win 5-4. More of the post game coming next on 101
Look
ESPN.
At this guy.
Okay, Donnie, don't you ever do that again. I got two kids at home that need food and diapers. And don't you ever, ever do that again into that microphone.
Guys, you know what, though, man? Like
awesome.
But in seriousness, I like kind of keeping a little bit of space, of that space that you guys get with the team. I'm okay to not have that.
Yeah.
Because, man, when I have had rough interactions with musicians, I hate it.
Takes it away.
It really takes it away. And I just don't want that with sports. Like, and maybe one day it gets there, whatever. But, like, right now, I just like having that kind of wall.
I'll tell you what's weird, and I'm sure you have this more than I do because you've covered it a lot longer. But when I was growing up, like, getting into sports, I was Donnie. Like, I was diehard fan. When the Blues would lose, I would cry. I was diehard. But, like, the longer you work around the broadcast booth and you're around the players, like, a little piece of that fandom dies in you. And it's not a bad thing. It's just, like, you cover the team, and so you know the ins and outs of it. You know the nuances. So that passion that you get for a great win or an ugly loss, it's like, well, you know, they had to travel, or, you know what, they're in a bad spot right now. Like, I've been to games with my wife or with my dad since I've been doing this, and 2013, I think I started doing pre and post. There is nothing more humiliating than the Blues scoring a goal and my dad jumping up to celebrate, and he looks down and I'm just sitting in the seat still. He's like, why aren't you cheering? I'm like, oh yeah, they scored. And you just stand up. Like, it's so weird.
Yeah.
But then, like, in playoffs in the press box, if they score an overtime goal, like that goal that they scored against the Colorado Avalanche on the road, Robert Thomas went end to end to send it to the next game, I freaking lost my mind in that studio. Like, if they had cameras in there, I was throwing stuff. I was so excited. It's just weird how that dynamic changes.
It's totally true, and I don't know if it develops over time or if you cut the cord right away. You know, obviously I had to 25 plus years ago, and look, I fully admit I was a Blues fan growing up and had posters all over my walls and went to Brentwood and watched them practice and got autographs afterwards. I remember Murray Barron, he came out and he had a parking ticket on his Mitsubishi 3000. That's how far we're going back here.
Oh my gosh.
And he just took it. I'll never forget this, however old I was, 20 years old, let's say. He takes the ticket off his Mitsubishi, crumbles it up like a piece of paper, and like threw it on the ground. Like that's what he had been saying.
Murray Barron doesn't take any of that trash.
But it's true. You just develop this thing where you're not a fan anymore because you have to be objective,
yeah,
and you're in the media. I remember when I was lucky enough to start going to Blues games when I was 19 years old and be like the Cub reporter, shagging quotes for Dave Lukeing, Tom Wheatley, Jeff Gordon, the Blues writers at the time. And I sat next to Dave Lukeing one time, and I know that Esa Tiikkanen was involved in the goal, but I can't remember who scored it. But I'm in the press box, I'm sitting next to all the professional post-dispatch writers, and the Blues score, and I jump up and start, woo! Like this, and Dave Lukin goes, you might want to sit down. And so ever since then, you've just learned. And I don't think it's hard after a while.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, Pat Maroon scores double OT against Dallas, and you don't even flinch.
Oh, yeah. There's video proof of me celebrating that in a broadcast booth where Joe Vitale has got his Play Cowboy guns, and he's shooting them in the broadcast booth. So there's video footage of us celebrating that one.
It's nice. So sometimes, though, when I go to a show, when I go to a concert, I know I'm a drag because, like, I know after three songs, that's when I just know kind of how shows go and have been to so many that sometimes I don't think I'm very fun to go to these shows with. So it's just, you know, but again, very lucky to have, yeah, been in this position to be able to do this and, you know, to have these kinds of things to talk about. But I had a chance yesterday to go to the Blues game. My oldest son and I have not had a chance to hang out since before Christmas. So we got really great seats and went and watched the team. And you know, in the first period, it kind of seemed like the team was finding its way a little bit. But once they did, man, they friggin' got another W. 5 friggin' wins in a row. 2 weeks ago, I'm writing these guys off as saying, well, let's get a draft pick. And now I'm like, let's go playoffs.
Yep.
Here we go. So, you know, man, I don't, and I heard Curbs this morning with the morning show on 101. And listen, man, I know that these aren't necessarily super pretty. I know that there are times with some of these games where we can go, maybe they shouldn't have won them. Okay. But they have. And now that's freaking 5 in a row with a terrible Columbus team coming tomorrow night. So let's make it 6. Why the hell not?
Yeah.
Why don't we just do this damn thing, guys?
They started that road trip, and they were 5 points out of a wild card spot, and now you're sitting currently in one of those wild card spots. In 4 games, you made that significant of a jump. You jumped over like 4 teams, put yourself in a wild card spot. The Calgary Flames game, the Vancouver Canucks game, watching it and then doing post game, maybe I had a little bit of a negative tone to it because you watch it and you say, they didn't have any business winning these hockey games. Like, if you just look at the stats and take the names out of it, you'd look at Vancouver and say, well, that team should have won. But they did. And then that Seattle game happened, and that Seattle one for me was like, okay, this one's going to be very difficult, and you found a way to push through. They looked better in that one. Then the LA Kings one. That LA Kings one, that sucks. I mean, they stayed in Seattle the next day and then flew out. So you're talking about not only dealing with the 3-hour time change, but you're dealing with the jet lag. And I know people hear this and say, they're professional hockey players. That's just excuses. No, man. Like, I get it. That's exhausting. And then you had to go out there and play that game. You were feeling your way through. 2 months ago, they couldn't win without their A game. The only way they were winning was when they were perfect from puck drop to the end of the hockey game.
Yeah.
And we were saying, well, you got to figure out how to win with B and C games, because if you don't, you're never going to do anything. Now you're winning with your B and C games, and we know that they have those A games in them. So to me, that's a really good dynamic. You still proved that you're a very good team in tight hockey games. If you could just get to the All-Star break by winning 6 consecutive games with your B and C game against some pretty good teams, you get 2 weeks to figure out how to re-find your A game and then carry that the rest of the season. That's a good spot to be in.
Yeah, and I kind of learned this years ago as a reporter, and you're covering the team on a regular basis, and you you know, you don't want to get caught up too high in the wins.
You don't want to ride the roller coaster.
Yeah, you can't ride the roller coaster. Alex and I have talked about that before, but here's the thing. Here's the one thing you can't do as a reporter. You can't criticize them when they lose and point out how bad things are and how awful, you know, they're playing. And then they win some games, and then you say, well, you know, they're playing bad, but somehow they're winning, and it's analytics show that they're going to come back down to earth, and this is not real. Like, you can do that, I suppose, if you want to have that 35,000 and say, hey, is this a serious playoff team? You know, I guess not, because, look, even though they're winning some games here, it's kind of smoke and mirrors a little bit. But I'm not going to be that guy. I'm not going to write 10 articles ripping them, and then they win five, and especially in the fashion that they're winning them. And another thing, I believe that playing like this can be contagious, and the players the past couple nights have said so. Yeah, you're feeding off it, each one of these finishes, and then guess what? Maybe it builds some self-confidence, some team confidence, and you do start playing the right way when they come back from the All-Star break. Maybe you have longer stretches of good hockey, and then it leads to building a foundation, and nobody's going to remember that you snuck out a few of them early on in this streak. So are they going to just push ahead and close the gap between third place and be in the top three in the Central Division? Probably not. But they're playing, like you said, BC hockey right now, and they're winning games.
Well, and real quick, Donnie, the other part with that, too, is like you're picking up points, which is the most critical piece of all of this. But look at the way they're winning. 4-3 overtime, you know, 4-3 overtime. You're 4-3 coming back.
4-3 overtime.
Yeah, three
4-3
straight,
3
actually.
Overtime. Yeah. Well, you got a loop here?
Yeah, just keep playing it because that's what it seems to be. But you're winning those one-goal games. And last year, they couldn't do that. Like, last year, the team couldn't figure out how to win tight hockey games. And Joe and I were talking about it on pregame last night because, you know, the Blues are in the second longest winning streak right now in the National Hockey League behind Edmonton. And Edmonton's on a 16-game bender right now. And Joey was a part of that Pittsburgh Penguins team that won, I thought it was 15 in a row. So Edmonton just surpassed them. And Joey said, like, when teams are in a win streak, it's not a cockiness, but you come to the rink expecting to win.
Yeah.
He said it's just a feel of confidence. And then Braden Schenn told Curbs and Joey yesterday on postgame, we just know we're finding ways to win right now. We know we're going to be in a hockey game until the end of the game. And right now, what was the one reason that Craig Berube was let go? Because players weren't responding, but also they lacked confidence.
They didn't feel like they had a chance to win once they got down and they checked out of games.
They lacked confidence. And now, if you want to call it Drew Bannister, fine. Steve Ott said yesterday that, you know, this is a lot of the leaderships, Parayko, Thomas, Falk, Binnington. These guys are taking that locker room over right now. But now you've got a group that feels every time they're in a hockey game, the other team scores a goal. I think they've done it like four in their last seven. The opponent has scored first. Blues tie it up.
Yeah.
How many times have they come back in games in this four-game stretch?
Yeah, we did in press row last night. Six times they've come back in a deficit in this five-game winning streak.
So I mean, this team, you can be down on them if you want because the analytics show that even strength, they're not a good team. Doesn't matter. They're getting the bounces and finding ways to win because they're a confident group.
Well, and Rook, it might matter in 2 weeks. You might look back and say whatever, but you can't do it right now.
Right.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, you know, man. I mean, you have to enjoy the moments, however they're coming about. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the thing that I like is that there's growth. All right, and it's not perfect, and it doesn't always have to be linear or whatever. But there is growth. There are games I feel like in these last five that a couple of months ago, the Blues would absolutely have been out of. I would have already been checking on office reruns in the middle of the second period. You know, but that is not happening with this team. There is a drive. There is a desire. Here's my slight bit of frustration. I was thinking of this coming in. What if this team decided, hey, we want to play like this all the time? You know what I mean? Because it's clear that it's in them.
Like so, in all games?
From puck drop till the end of the game.
It just makes you wonder, like, these guys could, again, maybe not win a Stanley Cup, but they could be a freaking nightmare in the second half of the year because they do have that. They do have a little bit of that grimy in their game. They do have some of those guys that can do that. And the thing that just frustrates me just a touch is that I feel like we could be seeing more consistent play out of this team. But I guess when you won five in a row, maybe I should shut up with that and we'll pick that up at another time. But you know what I'm saying? I feel like this team has it in them to even still be a little bit better and a little bit more consistent.
Yeah, when they want to, and that's the biggest thing. And look, I guess, you know, even though we're giving them a ton of credit for the way they're playing right now and we're trying to push that analytical view off to the side, I mean, if the other team scores in one of these overtimes, you know, maybe we're talking about they've won three out of our last five or whatever. So it can bounce both ways. But like Alex just said, you know, Braden Schenn in the locker room last night, he's like, we just feel that belief. We feel like we can do it. And we as media, as fans, I don't think should argue with that because that's the thing that we criticize all the time. So let's not give them crap. Can we say crap?
Yeah.
Can we
get, let's whoa, whoa, whoa. Come on. Watch your mouth.
Settle
JR.
Down, JR.
Come on. My mother's listening.
No, I'm just kidding. Hi, Mom. We can't feed it to them every corner, right?
Like, yeah.
You can't. You just can't.
And the other thing, and I know people are going to hate to hear this right now, so get ready to throw something at your phone or smash it, but this is the youth side of it. And I don't mean young in terms of age. I mean young in terms of experience. Like, yes, it is inconsistent. And yes, guys are playing hard in one period and not playing the other. Like, for me, that Calgary game, the part that I got frustrated with was like, man, what does it say that your coach has to chew you out in between periods so that you actually show up? But they showed up after he chewed them out.
Yeah.
But if you look at the growth that Robert Thomas did from last year to this year. I mean, we all can agree he's been one of the best players this season. Last year, we were talking about, do the Blues have a number one center? Or do they? We talked that they should bring back Ryan O'Reilly because we weren't sure if Robert Thomas was ready for it. Well, in one season, he went from a player that we weren't sure about to being the best centerman on the team. Now, let's do that with the Jordan Kyrou and the Pavel Buchnevich and the Jake Neighbors, like those guys, and Alexei Toropchenko, to where maybe it's inconsistent in games, and yeah, they're 24 years old, and yeah, they've been in the league for 3 years, but one season they get a taste of, hey, this is what it looks like when you play well, and this is what it looks like when you don't play well, and let's go down the hypothetical path, you don't make the playoffs. Those players now figure out, like, yo, you know what? If I play this way for an entire game for 3/4 of the season, we're a playoff team.
Yeah.
And then you go into the offseason training that way. That is a much different feel for a group of players, I would imagine, than getting into the playoffs, winning one round when you played half of the season and saying, well, that was good. Let's just keep going.
Doesn't it feel like not only have we seen Robert Thomas grow on the ice, but also I feel like just over the course of the season so far and how he's dealing with the media, he seems to be feeling like he's getting a little bit more comfortable in that realm of things. And JR, you could speak to that a little bit more specifically, but also too, he's looking like he's starting to freaking hate to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
He's starting to get that sneer when they lose where you're just like, ooh, I betcha that
that's
he
a
is
dangerous
not,
player.
That's what I'm saying. And I feel like, good Lord, baby Jesus, if we could ever get Jordan Kyrou to have that sort of we might very much have something between these two.
You know why that is, Donnie? Because this is the first time that he's ever lost.
You look at
Robert Thomas. He won the Memorial Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Then he won
Stanley Cup.
World Junior.
Oh yeah, World Juniors. That's right. Gold medal at World Juniors.
And then the Stanley Cup. And so now you get to a situation where you lose for the first time. But no, you nailed it. You're absolutely right. Like, you know, I felt like Robert Thomas was the guy probably after Braden Schenn that could have been the captain, and we all talked about that leading into the decision. You know, I felt like he just wasn't quite ready, and I think a lot of times you want to give those younger guys a chance to just focus on their game. Mm-hmm. And he did that last offseason. Obviously, he's taken it to another level. And I think that confidence in the way he's playing and now that he's figured it out a bit and now that he's that guy, right? So he's been second fiddle to Ryan O'Reilly here for several years. Now he's got the confidence, he's playing well, and now he can use that leadership. I mean, you can be a guy who's supposed to be pretty good, but if you are that guy, now what you say carries some weight. So I think you're dead right.
JR, do you, and on your side of things, and maybe this is just me making it up, do you feel like Thomas is more comfortable in his role? I mean, because he's getting guest spots on the morning show here. You know, he's definitely one that the Blues media relations people are putting out there to talk to you.
Last season, he's gone to Vegas for the media day, too, before the season.
Do you feel like he's a bit more comfortable in that role? He seems less stiff in interviews. That's the reason that I asked.
No, it's a great observation. And sometimes, you know, I rely on people like yourself or family members, friends. They watch that stuff. And like we're so right there in the middle, we're asking the questions. Yeah. So we kind of, but you know, people who watch the interviews and they see that. And I agree with you, you know, now that you say that and I'm thinking about it for a minute, that I do think he looks more comfortable, he feels more comfortable. And it would only, you know, be logical because he's becoming that guy. And so, you know, I like I said a second ago, I just felt like Robert Thomas wasn't quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And I think it would have been a lot to put on him to wear the captain. And Braden Schenn does a phenomenal job with all that stuff. So let Robert Thomas grow into that role. And that's exactly what we're watching right now.
I think right now you've got more guys than people would believe in that locker room that hate, that get pissed off when they lose. I think Thomas is that guy. I think Jake Neighbors is that guy. And this is only his like first full season, and this is Jake Neighbors. I think Toropchenko's that guy. I think he clarified that for us last year by calling out his entire team. Jordan Binnington, to me, absolutely is that guy.
Oh, my gosh. He might be number one.
He's number one, two, and three. And honestly, I could see a little Joel Hofer in that, too. So, like, I think you've got those guys in there. And sometimes that's all you need in a locker room to get your get out of water is to have those guys that hate losing. I think Jimmy Snuggerud is going to be that guy from what we've seen in college and World Juniors. So you're starting to get that nucleus of guys that the Blues had in 2019 that, like, when you would lose, boy, they would get pissed off. Like,
goodness.
Steen would freaking hate losing. Like, there would be an attitude change from when they were winning and losing in that locker room. So I think that's a really good thing to have for the Blues, that you got a nucleus that's beginning with a Robert Thomas at the helm and then a Jake Neighbors and some of these other guys.
All right, so I would say I mean, it's tough at this point. I think if you're looking for an MVP of the season, I think you could talk Robert Thomas. I think you could talk Colton Parayko. And I definitely think that Jordan Binnington, he would be my MVP. All right. But we've got Joel Hofer, who played yesterday, has been a backup, has put up some pretty solid backup numbers. I'm interested to know from you guys what you have thought about Joel Hofer's first season as the number one backup to Binnington. How do you project Joel Hofer going forward? You know what I'm saying? Like, is he a number one eventually? Do you see? What are the kind of things that you see from Joel Hofer that you've seen so far?
Well, first of all, team MVP. We just did that at The Athletic a day or two ago. And if you did not go with Robert Thomas first and then mention that Jordan Binnington is in the conversation,
trash take, JR.
Then you're wrong, because that's no, I'm kidding.
Trash take, JR.
Colton Parayko's in there too. You know what? They don't want us to ride the fence, but I tried to sneak Binnington in there too, because Binnington probably is the MVP.
Yeah.
But I went with Thomas because, you know, he's projected 90 points. Binnington has been phenomenal. He has stolen them games. He is the reason why they are where they are. So let's go
Hold on,
MVP.
I need to click
guys.
That off of my bookmark. Athletic pieces, so I don't
taking
read
that
it.
Off.
I'm not going to read that
and
one.
How do you fit Parayko in there, too? Because he's deserving as well. So it's tough. But anyway, I don't mean to get off your Hofer question. I think, from what I see, Alex, you, whatever you think here, I think he's going to be a good one. And I think that what you're seeing right now is a guy who's learning the ropes. And that goes without saying, you know, first full season, yada, yada, yada. But he loses three a few weeks ago, and he tries to figure out what's going on. And he has some talks with some guys like Scotty Prinovich, his buddy. Hey, you need to relax a little more. He relaxes, and then he looks like a great goaltender. and here lately, I mean, these monster saves, I mean – that one in overtime the other night, even though he then said, here, take a shootout center off me right after it, flipped him the puck. But I just feel like I always try to look at it like this. In 3 years, you're going to watch Joel Hofer, and he's going to be, I think, a good goaltender. You're like, man, you could see it when he was coming up. And who knows what's going to be the situation with Jordan Binnington at that point, but it's a perfect situation for success for Joel Hofer right now?
All right. So first and foremost, we don't know if Scott Perunovic is hurt. He left the game last night, lower body injury, and we don't know where that's standing. We don't know how bad that is.
Yeah.
Okay, one thing that I was thinking yesterday, and I completely understand that what I'm about to say, I am about the 6,000th person to say this, all right? So it's not a unique thought. But as I'm watching the game yesterday, and I'm watching Torrey Krug and Scott Perunovic, I'm thinking to myself, I just feel like that is two of the same guy. Mm-hmm. It just does not seem to me that that combo is going to need to be here going forward. It just seems like Perunovic does what Krug does. What does Krug do that Perunovic does not do? That would be the better question.
I think it's a good question, because I think what Krug has shown this season is what we were told he had, and I think we saw a little bit of it in that first season, is that he plays a feisty brand of hockey. Now, I understand your rebuttal to that listening is probably, but there's a lot of goals that get scored when he's on the ice. Fine, but him and Matt Kessel have created a pretty good and reliable pair, especially when you're playing him 23 minutes a night. But, man, Torrey Krug literally takes zero shifts off. Like, he is very physical in front of his own net. He's not afraid to throw an extra whack at a player. And sometimes I think that pissed-off attitude is very good to have for a team. I don't know if you have a lot of those defensemen on the roster, although Colton Parayko seems to have a little bit of anger these last couple of games, which is nice to see. But Perunovic definitely doesn't do that.
Yeah.
And I also think what Torrey Krug's not afraid to do is shoot the puck, and Scott Perunovic delegates to passing first, which isn't a bad thing. I mean, what's he got? Like six assists in his last eight games or something like that?
Yeah, 10 and 14.
So, like, you're not afraid to pass, which is a good thing if you're getting those assists, but I think that's definitely the difference maker right now. The problem, to me, isn't Torrey Krug and Scott Perunovic. It's also you have Nick Leddy. And Nick Leddy's been playing awesome, which is not a bad... Like, Nick Leddy's been playing like a top-pair defenseman with Colton Parayko, at least in this last stretch. But what I mean by you have him is you've got three guys under 6 foot. And I do still think size is very important in the National Hockey League, especially on the back end when you get to the postseason. So it's, I think it's good to have three separate guys that do different things. But, man, like, sometimes you want a lot more Marco Scandellas than you want Torrey Krug's or Nick Leddy's just because of that size.
I think sometimes I go sideways on Torrey Krug because he looks like this guy in high school that picked on me all the time, and I'm not even lying. And so when I see him, I'm like, oh, dude, you look like a douche.
This guy.
But I think I'm probably underselling Torrey Krug in that comparison, because obviously, you know, Perunovic, the physicality of it, and this team needs a little bit more salt, not less salt.
Yeah. Especially in front of your own net, especially when guys are, last year, earlier this season, guys were taking extra whacks at your goaltender or, you know, taking extra whacks at guys. Like, you need that guy every once in a while to throw an extra cross check.
All right, so this set, so 5-game winning streak in a playoff spot. I think that a lot of us are surprised that we're in this spot going to the All-Star game. You had a coaching change a couple of months ago. Guys, at this point, the more the Blues put together W's, the more I'm thinking to myself, there's no reason to move on from Drew Bannister. There's no reason. But I believe that Doug Armstrong is still out there looking. He doesn't seem to maybe be convinced that Drew Bannister is the guy, or at least he's doing his due diligence. So how do you guys see this working with Drew Bannister? What does he have to do to get this gig? And if you're thinking, maybe he's not the guy, who else do you got?
Well, I think Doug's doing his due diligence. And I think you touched on it last week, Alex. Elliot Friedman, the great national reporter, Sportsnet, he reported that the Blues might have had some interest in Patrick Waugh, which led New York to act quickly, the Islanders, in hiring Patrick Waugh. And so what does that tell us? That tells us that even though things are going pretty well with the Blues and Drew Bannister right now, that Doug has to do the work he's got to do. Like, there wasn't a report that they were close with Waugh or they're close with anybody else. So I think that's a situation where Doug's always doing his work, right? And then in the meantime, you just watch the team under Drew and see if you like it. And you can judge the W's. Those are great. But like we talked about earlier, a few overtime wins. You got to like what you're seeing with the progression of the team before you're going to commit to a guy, you know, long-term as a coach, you know, 2-3 years, whatever the contract would be. So I got to believe that we're kind of still in the same boat that we've discussed the past couple weeks, and that Drew Bannister has put himself in the best position possible to keep the job. Now, whether he gets it or not, that all depends on this tight circle that Doug Armstrong operates with in terms of who he's talking to.
All right, so then, guys, here's this, all right? And then you guys are much more qualified to discuss this than me, much. But if it is not Drew Bannister, there's just not very many, for lack of a better term, and I'm sorry to use it this way because it feels a little disrespectful, retread coaches that I would want to give this gig to. It seems to me that this opportunity is perfect for somebody that's younger, that has an ability to talk to younger players, and not one of these guys that we have seen that's done it before but has never, made it to the finish. I just don't feel like there is a guy that's really in the NHL right now that even if he loses a gig would be a really good fit here.
Yeah, well, and that's – so there are names that come to mind when I think of like, okay, if you're going to go down that path that it's not Drew Bannister, then who? First thing that I do, though, is I look at what Doug talked about. He talked about you got to find somebody who can win but also develop. And that is not an easy thing to accomplish, is get a guy who can come in and start winning, but also develop these younger players and get the right message to the players, which is what Bannister's accomplished. So in that sense, as much as people would like the idea of a Joel Quenneville, I don't think that matches it. Because if you're Joel Quenneville and you get reinstated, do you really want to go to a team that might not be winning right away? I think that also would take out a player like a Rod Brind'Amour if he becomes available, because that's a coach that I would imagine after being in Carolina for that long wants to win. The guy that I thought of immediately when we were talking about this, the first one was Patrick Waugh, but that one's off the table now, was Sheldon Keefe with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Why?
Because of his success with offensive-minded players. And what I mean by that is look at William Nylander's numbers offensively when he was under Mike Babcock. Mike Babcock, he wants the offense, but he's more of a don't mess this up type of coach. William Nylander was never more than a 20-goal player in three seasons, I believe, when Mike Babcock was there. Sheldon Keefe, who had success in the American Hockey League with the Toronto Maple Leafs, if I'm not mistaken, he was the coach for the Toronto Marlies, he stepped in, and William Nylander took off and was a 30-goal scorer consistently and is what he is right now. Now, I know you're probably thinking, well, Sheldon Keefe hasn't won anything. I'd say that's a little bit more roster problems than what that's a head coaching problem with no goaltending and no defenseman. Not saying he's better than Drew Bannister, but the first thing I thought of was, what's the first guy everybody points to when they say, well, this guy's got to get the best out of this player?
What are you talking about? Kyrou, yeah.
So if I'm looking at it and saying, okay, well, this is a coach that got the best out of another offensive-minded player and turned him into – Nylander's not a defensive-minded player, but at least he's not liability on the ice, and he's a 35-plus goal scorer every year. So that was the guy that I was like, you know what? If you go down that path, that would be one that I would – at least consider if I'm Doug.
Funny part is Alex said, here's what you guys are thinking, and it wasn't. The thing that I was thinking was, the guy has a job, Keefe. So Alex is firing Keefe and hiring here.
Yeah, but we
St.
already
Louis.
Know what's going to happen when Toronto gets bounced in the first round.
Yeah, and that's why, listen, right now I think it's, I like Drew Bannister's chances.
Yeah.
But that's why I think that you wait until the offseason if you're going to bring in somebody else, because you can talk about the Gerard Gallants. You can talk about the I don't even know why I bring up Bruce Boudreau's name, because he just does not seem
that's not happening
at all for sure, like a guy who you would even consider. But my thought here is, you got a Keefe in Toronto, right? You got a Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh is another name. And I know that Kyle Dubas has come out on a number of occasions and say, hey, look, we like Mike Sullivan, but things aren't going well in Pittsburgh, and they might miss the playoffs, and they might need to go a different direction. This is a guy that's won a couple cups, and if he were available, the way I liken it, it's a situation like Craig Berube, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the league might look at him like a retread, or he's moving on from the Blues, but in other cities, they're looking at him like a fresh face. Even Toronto, they're saying, how about Berube in Toronto, right? Well, there's going to be a lot of teams interested in Mike Sullivan, even though it hasn't worked out in Pittsburgh. So if he's the type of guy that becomes available in the offseason, that could be a reason why, if you're Doug Armstrong.
Look at how fast Bruce Cassidy was hired after he was let go by
Big
Boston
time.
In the offseason.
And that's success.
One with a Mike Sullivan, too.
Well, and you would see both of those situations in Sheldon Keefe and in Sullivan and go, okay, well, obviously he's doing the best that he can with rosters that are not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was thinking about Pittsburgh the other day. That situation, and they just have not been able to retool on the fly. And boy, don't you think that that's going to just have to be a bottom up rebuild?
The problem is, how are you rebuilding when you've got Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and Eric Karlsson
but those
all
are
locked
like,
up?
Especially Crosby. Those are the guys that produce him.
Well, yeah, Crosby's a 90. Malkin's great. Letang's the older guys are actually awesome for him. The problem is everything else. Some of it's Eric Karlsson, but then you're going to lose Jake Guentzel because you're not going to be able to afford to keep him. They're going to trade him at the deadline possibly. So you can try and rebuild it, but the only way you're doing that is if you move guys. But I think all of those guys have no movement clauses too.
It's just very interesting, the timing of this. And by the timing, I mean like as far as where the Blues are.
Yeah.
Because since it's in this kind of like middle zone, you know, not a rebuild, but we're not there. It's just kind of a – because, see, I wonder. All right, so when you talk about Coach Q, it's not as though if he would entertain this job that it's a complete rebuild from the bottom up. I mean, he would have a lot of pieces to work with. Whoever gets this gig, even a manager, they got pieces to work with. So I don't feel like he would be that far off from maybe being in that elite –
maybe, but you're also going to have to tell him this is the group you have, but you also have a 21-year-old Jimmy Snuggerud. You also have a 21-year-old Dvorsky, a Stenberg, a Lindstein in the next couple of years that you've got to get them into the NHL level.
And also, you know, try to make this comment on the fly here. You know, if you're Craig Berube, you want to win now, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But if you know that Doug Armstrong and or the organization want this young player to play and this young player to play, if you're Craig Berube, you want the vets in there, you want the experience, you want this. So how do you work that?
Sure.
I mean, I can't imagine a conversation where Joel Quenneville's like, all right, give me the best of the best that you got. I'm going to go win with it. You know, I might just be here 2, 3, 4 years, whatever. Well, we kind of need to play.
Got it.
We got to play this guy Kessel. We got to get Bolduc in there at some point. You know, whatever. I'm just naming names.
Yeah.
And Quimba's like, no, dude, I'm going to win.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense too. I didn't necessarily think about that. But I mean, I feel it. I would just feel as though that this. I guess maybe this is just the homer in me, but I would feel like this would be an attractive job.
Yeah. No, I especially because ownership always spends to the cap. You've got ownership that's willing to provide everything you need to win a Stanley Cup. That's why, first things first, it's an appealing job. You've got a president of hockey operations that has a lot of a track record of success, not just in St. Louis, but with Hockey Canada and the world, everything that he's been a part of. So, like, it would be an appealing job. You've got, to me, you've got the cornerstones of what you need to win. You've got a number one centerman, you've got a number one defenseman, and you got a number one goaltender. Yep. And then from there, you just build around it. I think it just comes down to timing because coaches, I mean, ask anybody who's coached in the NHL, they'll tell you there's a shelf life. You've probably got 5 years, maybe, and then they're moving on if they don't get the best out of it. So if you're, let's just use Joel Quenneville, for example. If you're him and you just get reinstated in the NHL, you're going to have a shelf life of probably 3 to 5 years here in St. Louis. Do you think you can win a cup in 3 to 5 years with this team, or would you rather go somewhere else and try and win a cup in 3 to 5 years?
Guys, I feel, though, and I feel like you said this a couple of podcasts ago, Alex, that it feels like, and I'm not, this may be a weird thing to say, but I feel like if Drew Bannister does get the gig, then we kind of know that when the Blues are ready to take the next step in 2 years or whatever, that we're going to be looking for somebody else.
Yeah, depending on how he does, how the team responds.
Because you could have a John Cooper or Jared Bednar in your hands to where he develops and he's through the bad times and then he's through the great times.
Because I like that.
That's what Bednar was at the beginning of
Colorado.
Sure,
that's a good point,
They had to develop MacKinnon to get him to the superstar level that he was and bring in all this talent. And then it was just 4 years ago that Jared Bednar really started this dominant run when all of these players started to develop. John Cooper took over when the Tampa Bay Lightning had missed the playoffs. What was it, 3 consecutive years? And I believe he got to the playoffs the first year, which was impressive. And then they started to win their games. But now John Cooper's going to go through a little bit of a downturn with a roster. So you could have a John Cooper, Jared Bednar on your hands where he's here for the next 10 years that you run with.
Yeah, and let's use the example that we always use is, you know, Craig Berube. Like, who would have thought, right?
Absolutely.
But then you win the cup, you get the...
And I always think it's good. Drew Bannister's in the different category because this is his first real big gig at the NHL level. I always think guys that get that second taste of being a head coach elsewhere have a new lease on life and they have their success. Like, you know, we talked about Sheldon Keefe and Mike Sullivan. Wherever they go... Just like Craig Berube, where you tasted the NHL in Philadelphia, it didn't go well. You went to the American Hockey League and you had success, and then you got that taste again in the NHL. Like, you get a lease on life. I feel like that's where the success seems to come from Bruce Cassidy with the Vegas Golden Knights right after Boston. So that's another thing to consider. But again, I think at the end of the season, I look at it and I say, does this guy benefit the team's long-term future more than this guy? Mm-hmm. And that's where, to JR's point, Drew Bannister, if you put this team in a playoff spot, you've got the ultimate upper hand, just like Craig Berube did, no matter what. Now, maybe somebody becomes available and you say, this guy's better, we believe, for the long-term future of these core members of our roster. But again, if you're Drew Bannister and Thomas is a 90-point player, Colton Parayko is playing top minutes in the NHL, Kyrou and Booch get to 30 goals, what else did you really want?
All right, I want to wrap this up here real quick, but I want to ask something very quickly about the Edmonton Oilers. So they are obviously on just a run of a run of a run. And I absolutely, Edmonton, like Toronto, I think I'm always going to have an affinity for, just because I remember the days growing up when I started loving hockey, the Oilers were a machine. What has happened to that team that was so freaking terrible defensively early in the year that they have got it friggin' locked in? And I had thought that I had heard, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that Paul Coffey started working with their defenseman?
Yes, and he had probably the best quote I've ever heard from a defensive, like, coach. I got to find it because I don't want to misspeak.
But he literally has...
He's been working with... He's doing with them what Larry Robinson was doing with the Blues, if I'm not mistaken.
Because he did not start as this year as a coach, correct? He came in as they were struggling.
Yeah,
isn't that true?
I was not aware of him being on the staff.
I believe he's been like kind of a defenseman consultant with the team.
But like now he's on the bench though, but right? Or maybe not.
I don't know. Okay. He might be on the bench. I haven't watched a lot of Edmonton Oilers games. Shoot, I'm going to kick myself for not...
Well, I came out of nowhere with this question anyway.
So while he's looking that up, though, I was on a call with the Athletics NHL writers this week, and the Edmonton writer was just talking about how the defensive structure is just night and day different. And obviously it has to be win 16 in a row. That's obvious. But I remember watching Edmonton games early on in the season. It didn't even look like a form of defense. So whatever, you know, Chris Knobloch and or Coffey's doing here in terms of getting these guys, because it's the same group. It's not like they
brought
in.
Right. It's not like they made any moves or anything like that.
And I guess you have to say that the goaltenders played a better too, you know, Skinner, but I think from a defensive standpoint.
So this is what he told the Athletic. Sorry, so he must be behind the bench, because there's pictures of him standing behind the bench. So he must be on the bench with him, kind of like Larry Robertson was. I told our D from day one, the only thing I expect is plays. If you can't make them, we'll get somebody else. It's plain and simple. I'm not here to make friends. I'm here to make them better. If you can't make the plays, just put your hand up and tell me. We'll get somebody else who can. That's nice, right?
There you go.
That's freaking Hall of Famer Paul Coffey that came in and said, if you suck, tell me now, because you're not playing for this team.
If I read that, I hear that, I'm like, oh, wait a minute. We can't say it. C-R-A-P.
Come on, Paul. Honestly, he says that, I raise my hand. Paul, I'm not sure if I can make plays, but you scare me right now.
But it's amazing to me how sometimes players will react to that as a challenge, and how other times they'll look at that and be like, screw you, dude. I'm not playing for you.
Yeah. Hey, wait, though. You know, with Alex, what we've seen with locker rooms the last five or 10 years and how they've changed, I guarantee you one of those guys like, who is this guy?
Right?
Who's this guy
that told you he's not going to make friends with us? Who are you?
Did he play?
Yeah, right. You walk in and be like, who's this guy talking to us right now?
All right, so I've got to wrap this up here because I got to go be on the radio. But tomorrow night, last game before the All-Star break, it is Rizzuto show night. I do believe there are still some tickets left, so go to 1057thepoint.com to check those out. I'm always... I'm working promotions for these guys. They don't even know. I'm like always doing this.
You could take the guy out of promotions, but you can't take the promotions out of the guy.
I should get a little piece of the action somewhere.
All right, Donnie, as you wrap it up here, send it off like you're doing post game, like you did earlier. I want to hear
send
you.
Send us a break.
You're confusing me, man. I'm already ending the podcast. How am I going to break at the same time?
That's what I need you to do, Donnie.
See, that's what he needs.
So, Tommy, if you heard that,
I'm not great at this, man.
Your kids are okay. They're going to eat for a while.
One more year of diapers, ladies and gentlemen.
It is the Last Minute Blues podcast for my dudes, Alex Ferrario and Jeremy Rutherford, and on the road, Jamie Rivers, and we miss you, Jeff Burton. Thanks very much for listening to the Last Minute Blues podcast. As always, let's go Blues!
The Last Minute Blues podcast. Hear more at 1057thepoint.com.